We are live on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus from 3 to 4 p.m. Of course, you can download us anytime you want on any of your podcast platforms. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne.
Hello.
In for our Sammy, who's on assignment, Daniele Franceschi.
Yeah.
Derek Brandeo and Jake the Snake Schultz, welcome into Dark T-Shirt Day on the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. As a reminder,
Mondays or what?
Yeah, as a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. All right, all the business is in. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in Ed Olchuk.
Yes.
TNT analyst. We'll get his thoughts on a pivotal game tonight in Florida where the Panthers can take a commanding 3-1 lead in the series.
I like whenever someone's not here, you just say they're on assignment and we just leave it at that.
Yes.
Don't worry about what the assignment is.
And people are thinking our Sammy's out there working his little tail off.
He is. He's digging up dirt.
He is.
So, like yourself, I talk to a lot of people between hockey games and they come up to me and they say things like, so?
What do you think?
Game 4, Oilers, what do you think? Got a shot? And so I put it to you.
Yeah.
Where are you sitting this morning?
Yeah. Okay. First of all, no more blowouts. A gazillion penalties.
Yep.
So I think everything will settle in and we will once again see something that mirrors game 1 and game 2.
Yeah.
I don't know if the Oilers will win, but I can assure you that I believe that this is going to be a much better, different look from the Edmonton Oilers.
I think you're going to get the Oilers' best game, the best performance that they can give you at this point. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, it was a game-time decision last game, played 15-30. I imagine the break has been good for him, a couple of days. Maybe you get a little bit better game out of him. Stu Skinner going back in the net. You surprised at all?
No, I'm not. I think me personally, I thought it would have been a really bad look.
Oh, really?
To move off of Skinner at this point. I think he's your guy. He's your number one guy.
Totally agree.
And at this point, if you would have gone to Pickard and they would have lost,
you got nothing.
But you also would have been accused of bailing out on why did you keep him? When everybody all season long was telling you, well, they can't win with Skinner, or you need to get another goalie for the playoffs, and you didn't, and you bailed on him as early as game 3.
Mm-hmm.
Then what was the point?
It reminds me a lot of we're doing our Toronto stuff here, and the decision to stick with the core in Toronto, had it pushed through, had they won, you'd have said that they were rewarded for their patience, their trust, their whatever. And if it doesn't, you say it's stubbornness and
but it's okay.
Yeah.
It's okay because it's not the first time that a coach or manager, or in this case in Toronto, a president, Brendan Shanahan, would go against the grain and say, everybody's telling me to do this, I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Is
that what this is?
That's what this is.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's, if I'm going down, I'll go down my way.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go down with my guys. And we can look at Brendan Shanahan in Toronto, doubling down, tripling down, quadrupling.
Non-nupling.
The core.
Yeah.
The core.
Yeah.
But he went down with a ship.
Yeah.
He didn't bail.
Nope. He was Captain Ahab. He was, as that thing sunk, he said, thanks.
So that's where I think the Oilers should be with Skinner.
Yeah.
Okay, if we're going to lose, that's my guy. I stuck with him. I brought him back after a disappointing Stanley Cup final last year, losing game 7. And I told him he's our guy.
Yeah.
I'm not bailing on him.
A couple other small changes. Jeff Skinner's coming in for Victor Arvidsson, so he gets his third playoff game, if I'm not mistaken. Troy Stetcher is going to return. I thought Stetcher was really good.
Yeah.
I did one game in the playoffs, or, with Ron and Kelly and Jen, and we showed stature highlights. Like,
I hope
he
you
was,
didn't jump the shark. I hope that's not as good as it gets for you. And
my
now,
career
now,
highlight is
now it's all downhill.
Is it Troy Stetcher highlight pack?
And now all you're left is with me and Sammy for the next 20 years. God, I hope that doesn't happen to you.
I'm telling people about the time that was my anyway. But yeah, so stature back in. He is a solid defender for them. And yeah, I've said to people when they ask me about it, like, I don't feel great about things for the Oilers. I'm being 100% honest. You're in Florida. Skinner, I'm not sure about. Hyman not being there hurts. RNH has no points in the last four games. I don't feel great about it. However, two really good teams, and every time you count the Oilers out, they win a hockey game. And if they do, all of a sudden, it's a three-game series, best of three. They have home ice advantage. They have the best players in the series, you know, in McDavid and Draisaitl. And you go, I don't know. Coin toss. So tonight... Tonight's the night.
Okay. As built up, this is really our show at the end of the day. Like,
talking to Eddie.
Eddie's going to make, he's going to sink or swim this show in the next 20 minutes because, you know, we're tired, Edzo. We're like, you know, on fumes, me and JB here. But you come in for the next 20 minutes, can shoot us right back to the top. A little pressure on you? Is that pressure?
Who do I invoice?
Triple invoice.
Offer you the same deal as right? Doug McLean.
You know what the square root of zero is, right?
Yeah, close your eyes. Tell me what you see.
So, Eddie, tonight, first of all, let's just go back to game three for a second. We saw two incredible games to start this Stanley Cup final, both of them going in overtime. How surprised were you to see a blowout the other night?
Well, I mean, I don't know if I was surprised, Kipper, but first off, thanks for having me, boys. Always great to be great to always be on with you guys. I think both these teams have that ability to get some separation in a game, and if the other team is going to make a parade and wear out the path to the penalty box like Edmonton did, even when the game was in doubt at 4-1, that was what I talked about on our broadcast down here in the States on TNT is, you know, a 4-1 game, you're still in it. Especially with, you know, I heard you guys talking about the big boys there and Connor and Leon. So I think that was probably more surprising than anything else to me is that they tried to play that way and stand up. And I guess the only way you can say it is they tried to, you know, send a message when they were down 4-1 in the second period. I just thought, look, if you get one on a power play, it's a one-goal game. And with the two big boys on Edmonton, why can't that happen? And right. I just thought that they, you know, they obviously lost their composure and a lack of discipline. And look, when it got to 5 or 6-1, I mean, I don't have a problem with it, Kipper. I mean, we had plenty of times, you know, in our time with the Rangers and then playing against you, and I'm sure – it happened in my career at other times where when a game gets out of hand, somebody's going to decide to, they can't take a win out of there. They're going to take an arm. They're going to take a leg. They're going to take a, you know, a finger, whatever it is. So I really wasn't surprised that we had a game like that. I'm just surprised that it how it got out of hand for the Oilers as quickly as it did. But I thought that had a lot to do with them in that second period of wearing out a path to the penalty box.
It's almost too much respect for your opponent, right? Where you're down three goals and you go, well, we can't come back now. You know, they had a lot of hockey game and they're very talented. So it does speak to all that Florida has been to other teams. They're a frustrating opponent to play. One of the reasons they are is the penalty thing you talk about. In the regular season, they take the most penalties of any team. And in the playoffs, it's almost like we're going to take a lot of infractions and we'll just see if you'll call them all, which you definitely won't. Is there some art to working the officials to gaining that upper hand in these playoff series?
Well, Bernie, I think probably experience has a lot to do with that. But I don't know if it's a tactic. But I think if you go back to period one of game two, Florida was trying to play that type of game, like the game that we know that they can play, right? Because they want to play 6-5, they'll play that. You want to play 2-1, they'll play that. You want to play a freestyle game where there's not a lot of hitting, they'll play that too. But then they're also going to play, we're going to punch you in the mouth and we'll see if you react. And if you don't, we're going to punch you in the mouth again. That's how they play. Once they got out of period one in game two, where it was all Edmonton, you got the 4-on-4 in a situation. I remember Nurse challenged Tkachuk, took him off the ice, and all of a sudden Leon and Connor, they went crazy and they're scoring goals at 4-on-4. And so I think after period one of game two is where the mindset changed for the Florida Panthers and said, look, let's play whistle to whistle. We're still going to bark. We're still going to, play a certain way, but we're not going to get caught up in any of the, the shenanigans and the scrums and the initiating of a lot of the after the whistle stuff. Because they came out and they had a different frame. They had a different look. We touched on it, myself, Kenny Albert, and Brian Boucher. We touched on it in that first period in game two. Gretz came on in between periods and said, if Florida's going to win, they got to stop going to the penalty box. And I mean, very similar to what we said. He just was able to, be elongated in between the first and second period. And since that time, there is no doubt that they have shown that experience. I just touched on, Borny, into the heart of your question, where they're much more selective on how they're playing and what the game is dictated. Now, if it's 4-1 after one tonight for the Oilers, I mean, you know that at some point somebody's going to be on the line or cross the line, and somebody's going to be looking to take names and numbers and have a conversation a little bit later. So I just think that Florida realized that we can't do this to ourselves against this team, because Connor and Leon are going to be out there in the most important situations. They're going to make you look silly, and they figured it out. And then Marchand scores a huge goal in game two, and we know where we are now in the series going into game four tonight.
You're watching and listening to my former teammate, Eddie Olchuk, former NHL forward, Stanley Cup champion, covering the NHL on TNT. So
is that all you have there in your bio?
Well, what, one time Toronto
Debonair
Maple Leaf,
man of the city,
Toronto Maple Leaf top scorer. What else you want? Traded while his wife was giving birth. What else can I do?
Yeah, that was. I just lead off with that one the next time. Just lead off while my wife
joining us now.
Hey.
While the lovely and talented Diana Olchuk was on her back at Scarborough Centenary on November 10th at 2:40 after in the afternoon.
Yes.
Do you remember young Eddie Olchuk got pulled out of the delivery room and was told, "You were traded. We traded you to the Winnipeg."
Come
Jets.
On.
Oh,
what?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Out of the delivery room.
I think he might have told this in the first year on our show, and it's all coming back to me. That's insane.
Yeah, and plus, Borny, we were playing that night against Chicago, oddly enough, my hometown team. And at that time, look at 1990, I didn't have a cell phone, okay? I didn't have one. And I don't know if I should have or whatever, but if you did, no. It was like this. It was like, hello? I'll leave the game when I can.
Hey, put your shoe back on, would you?
I know, thanks. Yeah, the team knew I was at the. We had been in at Scarborough Centenary, the hospital, the night before. So I called, left a message on the voicemail at the rink for the for Bob Stelic, who was our PR man. Then I finally talked to him. I said, "Hey, look, I'm not going to be at the morning skate. I'll be at the game at 8 o'clock, Hockey Night in Canada. My wife will have the baby by then." About 3 o'clock in the afternoon, my wife's on a scale of 1 to 10. She's about a 7. And all of a sudden, the doctor's saying, "Hold on, let me get my mask and my catcher's mitt on here. We're gonna have a baby." And then the nurse comes in and hands me a note and goes, "I read it. It says, Mr. Olchuk, the Maple Leafs are on the phone." I go, "Tell them I'll be at the game." She comes back 30 seconds later. She goes, "No, they really want to talk to you." And I'm like, "Are you kidding me?"
Yes.
The audacity.
I left the room. I went to the nurse's station, which was about 30 feet away, and. They got on the phone. They said, "We hate to do this to you, but we just traded you to the Winnipeg Jets."
Eddie, what did you say?
His wife's pushing at the time.
You remember those calling cards you used to have?
Yeah.
I had one in my pocket, so I got traded with Ozzy, my buddy Mark Osborne. I called Ozzy. I called Gary Lehman, my close friend. I called my dad, and I called Ricky Curran and Billy Waters, who were my agents. And I was maybe gone 5 minutes. I walk into the room. My wife's still in that same position on her back, you know, the whole nine yards. Doctor's at the foot of the bed, mask on, gloves on. And she goes, where have you been? I go, my aunt's sick. I don't know what the hell to say. Yeah. I don't want to say anything. She looks at me, Borny. She looks at the ceiling and she goes, where are we going?
Oh yeah.
God.
And I said to myself,
in between contractions.
Yeah.
I said, psychic and pregnant. I said, this is unbelievable. So I figured, well, guess. That's all I said was guess.
Guess?
Guess. She looks at me and she looks at the ceiling and goes, Winnipeg.
Come on.
All I see is the doctor with this most disgusting look at his face at the foot of the bed, takes his mask off. He pulls off the rubber gloves and he stands up and he goes, this baby ain't coming for about 4 hours.
It's going back in.
That's it. That's what happened. But you know what? Ended up being one of the best places I ever played in the picks. So, yeah. So, sorry to go off on a tangent there, but that's
what happened. Listen, a story like that, that honestly, your own, like, owed compensation from the team or something. You can't call someone out of the delivery room.
I tell players that story now, like, yeah. our current players in the league, right, or whatever.
They'd have quit.
And they like, no, come on. I go, no. That really happened.
Imagine being on the Leafs and being like, yeah, his wife's giving birth. Being like, all right, we'll call the hospital. It's like, can we do this tomorrow? No one can wait a day.
It's okay. Floyd Smith was on the phone, the general manager at the time, and he says, we hate to do this to you, but
they didn't hate doing it that much.
I know.
Anyway.
It's okay.
Sorry.
Can we get back to the Stanley Cup final?
Hey, hold on a second, Kipper. November 10th, 1990, that is the anniversary. That's my son Tommy's birthday. So anytime we get around that date or, you know, on his birthday, we have a little chuckle back in the day. You know what I mean?
That's wild.
Yeah. For that and more, buy Eddie Olchuk's book with Perry Lefko.
Very nice. Thanks, Kipper. Thanks.
All right.
At least mine didn't come with crayons.
Edzo. Yeah. As far as the goaltending scenario regarding the Edmonton Oilers, a lot of talk on whether or not you go back to Skinner or not. We know that he is. We know that they are. But how close was it for you on making a decision?
No, I thought to go right back to him. Now, is he on a short leash to maybe try to change the momentum of the series like Coach Knobloch did in that L.A. series? Hell yes. I think anything goes now. You want to argue a goal or two the other night in game three that, you know, you'd like to get a stop or whatever. Yeah, for sure. But I did not have a problem. I think you go to him and then I think you got to let, you know, you got to let Pickard in there if he happens to, you know, give up a couple of soft ones. I don't expect him to give up a couple, but I think anything goes now. I think that this is obviously, we know what it is. It's obviously a gigantic game. And I know what happened last year. We understand that both teams are different now. No Hyman, a banged up Ryan Nugent Hopkins, lineup changes for Edmonton. You know, it's an interesting dilemma, but not for me, for the goaltender. I think he's been pretty darn good. And I'm okay with the decision.
Eddie, one of the defining, I guess, traits of this Oilers team is when we write them off, they have success, right? Start of the year for a couple years in a row, they're done, they're not going to make playoffs, whatever, and then they get hot. You don't need me to explain it all. With Florida, so my point is, we don't know that Florida's going to win this series, win the Stanley Cup again. But if they do, if they manage to look like the team we've seen through a couple games here and they get it done again, I wrote an article that was like, basically said, I think general managers are going to take the wrong lessons from the Florida Panthers' success. Because I think right now you hear a lot of people saying, you know, you need to be tough. It's because the Panthers are tough, and that's why they win. They're mean, they're gritty, they're whatever. But to me, the lessons are they have great offensive players who play 200-foot game. You know, they commit all over the ice, these guys. Reinhardt gets Selke votes, and so does Barkov and Marchand, and they got six guys getting Selke votes. What do you think the defining traits are that are leading to the success of this Panthers team for three straight years now?
Wow. I would say depth for sure.
Yeah.
You know, the guy in goal he's gone to another level here. I don't think that Bobrovsky He was pretty good early in that first period, I thought, the other night in game three. And I know one hit him right square in the mask. The depth of this team, you know, I think the size of this team for sure.
Yeah.
But then also the willingness, though, Borny, is for a coach like Paul Maurice, he does play his bench. You know, he doesn't have to, you know, I would say exhaust his top players, because look, they get the 4-on-4 and they get the power play, whatever. But if he has Nosek, Gadjevic, and Greer out there, like that trio, I thought made a difference the other night in that game.
Yep.
When Greer was out, that's just a different look for that line. And I know Boqvist has come in and performed well at times in these playoffs for them. And I think he got a chance to be with, I think he was with Barkov earlier in the playoffs. And I think he might have scored maybe in the Toronto series. I can't remember. But anyways, what I'm getting at is I just think that, you know, the depth and size of their team, and they just play a certain way. And like I said, they do have the ability to play, you know, play any way that you want. And they got some really, really, really good players. There's no question about it. And you look at their back end, it's pretty mobile. Mm-hmm. They have the ability. I think, you know, when you talk about, you know, the lessons for other managers, Borny, when I look at it, is the ability on the back end to go ahead and either make a play, skate yourself out of trouble, or be able to, you know, get out of a forecheck, make that one move, and then make the right play out of the zone. Like, I think that their D really has a good job of it. And sometimes it's okay to go around the boards and around the glass and just get it into an area. And that's not just in the neutral zone where they do a lot of high flips, right? Like, they like to just get it into an area, get into a foot race, put some pressure on the other team in a neutral zone. But I think that their defense have the ability to do all of three of those things. And by the way, they got a couple of, you know, outstanding defenders back there. I mean, Seth Jones has really gone to another level here. Paul Maurice was talking about him the other day, and just about, you know, when he got here, he kind of felt it might take, you know, 6 to 12 months to really kind of get really comfortable here. And like, I mean, he's really grasped what they wanted to do, and he gives them another body back there. Remember, they had Brandon Montour back there, who's a pretty darn good defenseman and can skate you out of trouble. Yep. And Kipper, you know, this is you know, playing forward. I mean, you know, we loved when defensemen were able to make a play and just put it right on your tape when you're in stride, or, you know, to get out of the zone. And they have guys that are able to do that. I think that really makes a big difference on how they want to play night in, night out.
Two Hall of Famers for us in 94, Leach and Zuboff. Simple as that. You know, when I think about what defies the Florida Panthers, and yeah, of course, all of the things that you just mentioned, but the one thing that keeps standing out above all of it for me, Edzo, is they pass the puck better than any team. Like, I'm amazed at the way that they can move the puck north, south, east, west, the rim arounds, the clean, the way they can pick up a puck clean on a wrap around and get it back to the middle of the ice. And it's really led for me by the three guys up the middle in Barkov, Bennett, and Lundell. Like, no one can touch that middle of the ice. And that's where the domination starts for me, is those three guys and their high IQ, especially when it comes to moving the puck.
It's a great point. And they have the heaviness, they have the girth. Just, I mean, and when I say heavy, I mean, they have, I mean, when Barkov gets the puck, I don't know what the numbers are, Borny, but probably when he has the puck, it's probably pretty damn hard to get the puck off of.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a big body. Lundell has gone to another level here. Marchand has made, he's played terrific for him. And that line, Lostarinen and Lundell and Marchand, they've been just absolutely dynamite as a, you know, so-called third line. But they're slotted in an absolute perfect spot. You know, guys are always banged up, and we understand that, but you need those other guys to be able to step up and have games and have a game and a half. And, And it seems like every time that they need one, somebody is able to do that. So, I mean, it's a great point, the center ice position. You got to be strong down the middle with, we know that, defenseman through the center ice, and then you can work yourself out from there. But those guys are all pretty big bodies, and we know the playoff that Sam, right now, Sam Bennett's the favorite to win the Calder trophy. I'm sorry, yep. the Conn Smythe trophy. Sorry, yeah, the MVP. I mean, he is just that shift he had. We're going to isolate him tonight. I know it's not that difficult to make the decision, but I mean, the shift that he had before he scored his breakaway goal to I think that ended up being a 4-1 goal, where he took out Podkolzin, and then he took out Klingberg. And next thing you know, the guy's got a breakaway from the red line in, and, you know, he had the puck right, you know, I mean, he had the puck in front of him. And I always tell young hockey players when I work with them is that if you can get the puck to the side, it keeps the goaltender a little bit more honest, because you could pull the trigger at any time when it's off your hip or it's in front of you, right? I mean, right at your skate. So, you know, I was left-handed. So if the puck was off my left foot and I kept it here, and I know you got to worry about somebody coming, and I don't think Bennett had to do that. But what I'm getting at is he had the puck right in front of him. So for Skinner, he was either going one way or the other. If that puck is here, he could shoot it. He could fake, go this way. He could fake and go that way. He had three options. And I think, you know, I think Skinner, I think he guessed. That's just my opinion. I just think that when he was here, he thought he was going to maybe go to, you know, hit Skinner's left, and he ended up going back and all in one motion, a quick little backhand and then a shovel, and then he just buried it up top. I mean, that was a shift. I mean, that was
crazy. I mean,
that's Sam Bennett. And, you know, it's just the middle of the ice, to your point, Kipper, and well taken, that they're pretty damn good. And it's tough to find a center ice that they have. And look, I go back to the fourth line again. When Nosek, Gadjevich, and Greer are playing together, they were really effective late in the Toronto series, because I think that's where they made the change. I think it was early in the Toronto series where they put those guys together. And then against Carolina, I don't remember which games the guys were banged up a little bit, but like that, they're an effective line. Paul Maurice told me his plan was to, you know, get that fourth line compared to earlier in the series, because Greer didn't play. He'd like to get them 2 to 3 more minutes in a game. And that's a lot of hockey. I mean, that's 5 shifts, 4 shifts, 6 shifts. I mean, so they got depth up and down the forward unit.
Last one for me, Edzo, just quick, you know, if the Oilers are to come back and win this Stanley Cup, is it more than McDavid and Draisaitl, or is it just those guys got to be the best guys?
Can I say both?
Yeah, go ahead. There's no rules.
I think it's got to be both.
Okay.
I expect both those guys to have a great game tonight. Now, whether or not they score or not, right. I don't know, but I think they're going to generate some chances and they're going to get some looks, but they do. We know that they have, that being Edmonton, they got guys banged up, and that's just the reality of it. Yep. Just like Florida does, but they need their depth. They need somebody to step up. I will say this: I am surprised. I've liked the way that John Klingberg has played. To be honest with you, I thought he was pretty good in both the first two games of the Cup final. I did. The numbers and all that. I'm just saying, eye test, what I saw in the building. He has that ability to avoid contact, take away the forecheck, make a play on somebody's stick. Maybe he's banged up. I don't know. But I just think that that's a little bit bigger of a loss, in my opinion,
yep,
on the back end without Klingberg, because I think he's played pretty good. And I think he's been a good pickup, along with Wallman, obviously.
And so just to follow up one quick one before we let you go here on 97 and 29, we marveled at the depth this year for the Oilers, much better than we thought even last year, right, coming into this playoff. If the depth around McDavid and Draisaitl, they don't get off to a good start tonight, is there a danger that McDavid and Draisaitl take it upon themselves more as individuals to change it, and we see that, you know, that those two guys now are in a position, if I don't do it myself, then it doesn't get done once again?
Are you saying by themselves when they're together?
Do we see more individual efforts? Do we see Connor taking it upon himself, you know, with these dynamic rushes or many occasions going one versus two or one on three? And, you know, do we see those guys feel the pressure of carrying it more if the depth around them doesn't step up?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just human nature because if anybody can do it, they could do it. I mean,
that's right.
You draw a penalty maybe, and then all of a sudden, you know, you get a power play and you put a crooked number up on the board. So the really interesting dynamic for me is that when Coach Knobloch does load up with the big boys, and I'm not saying coming off a penalty, I'm not talking about that or going into a TV timeout because that's expected. Is when they do load up, or if they fall behind. I mean, look, you're ready for every scenario. If you fall behind a couple of goals and you don't have a lot going, and they do go together, you like somebody, yeah, the depth, and somebody's got to step up in a big way. So yeah, I think that it's just human nature, especially with two. You know, I mean, obviously Connor's the greatest, but you know, I mean, Leon. You can put where you want to put him. You want to put him top three? Okay, after Connor, great. Whatever the number is, like, he has that ability to take the game over and do what he does. The one last thing I will say quickly is I thought Adam Henrique. I'm looking at Adam Henrique to be a key guy tonight. I thought he had himself a sneaky good game the other night offensively. Yeah, I thought he played. He was very noticeable. So maybe he's got some traction here. So I'm going to keep an eye on Adam Henrique. He's my X factor tonight for the Oilers.
Enjoy the game tonight, Eddie, and we really appreciate your time here on the show. Thanks for doing this, pal.
All right, boys, love you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.
TNT covering the NHL.
Guess what? It is game time. Presented by Bet365, visit the app for the latest odds to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Play responsibly. Couple of numbers for us tonight. Kip, the Oilers are underdogs, plus 125 if you want to bet on them, minus 150 for Florida. I think if you believe the Oilers are going to win, there's probably better ways to make your money on that, which is you can bet 2 points for Leon Draisaitl, plus 128, minus 115 for McDavid for 2 points, which is crazy. But plus 125, you like the Oilers if they give you a little extra money on your bet?
Yes.
Yeah.
I do. I think, you know, to my earlier point here, that it's imperative, and I don't like the Oilers' chances if it's just down to McDavid and Draisaitl.
You don't?
Not against this team where four lines come at you in waves. Yeah. It won't be enough. To my point to Eddie is that, like, I don't know, Kapanen, Brown, put Coles in, Kane,
Henrique,
as he just mentioned. Oiler fans need two out of those names that I mentioned to play out of their tree trunk tonight, because it won't be enough to just tell McDavid, go do McDavid things and find us a way to win tonight. It won't work like that against the Florida Panthers.
No, well, you know, there's actually not another Oiler forward even listed that you can bet on for the Conn Smythe Trophy. Sam Bennett plus 115 is the favorite. McDavid plus 240. Brad Marchand has moved ahead of Sergei Bobrovsky to be in third at plus 500. That's crazy. If Brad Marchand won the Conn Smythe Trophy with Florida, that'd be some story. And we're going to talk about that after game time, which I believe I have to read that again. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary. Bet365 must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Play responsibly. That was game time.
Good job, pal. Okay, so we'll get into that a little bit more. I wrote an article today in the Toronto Star on Brad Marchand and which team in the National Hockey League need this guy the most.
Did you say Columbus?
A lot of talk about him being 37 and the windows missed on signing him on a big contract. I'm going to tell you why it isn't missed.
Okay.
That and more when we return to Real Kipper and Bourne.
Hey, it's Matt Marchese.
And I'm Mike Fiuta.
We're discussing the top stories of the day across the NHL and the hockey world, weekdays at noon.
It's the Fan Hockey Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and wherever you get your podcasts.
As a reminder, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Nick Kiprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee on a deep, deep assignment.
Gathering intel.
Yes. We're going to get into some news and notes as well. Chris Kreider has got a new home.
Yes.
Leaving Manhattan. Can't be too happy about that. I've already built a nice home, too.
Is that right?
Just finished a nice home there. But he'll probably make that his retirement place.
Where's he from? Isn't he from Long Island? He's from somewhere around there. He's American, right?
Oh, yeah.
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 Anyway.
Anyways.
Yeah, so that's not awesome for him. Well, here's my question with the Rangers. It's really easy to tear down. What? How are they getting better? Like, they traded for a kid named Casey Torrance, yeah. I think, which, you know, maybe he's a player. I don't know.
Well, I think they got $6.5 million off the books.
Okay.
That's a good start.
So I guess it depends what they do with that.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kreider's from Massachusetts.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was always talk about him going to the Bruins, too, as well. But I think...
Carey Terrence.
Salary cap room is, like, gold.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
so
but I do think...
It depends on how you feel it, though.
That was the case. It was the case when the cap was flat. It was really valuable to create space. Now, a lot of teams have space. Like, if they are entering this environment where they think they're going to go spend money on players, they're getting into bidding wars with other teams who have money now.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I understand why they're moving on from him. I hope that Terrence is a good player for them. They get a third rounder as well. And we'll see what they do with the cap space.
Okay, let's get right into this whole Brad Marchand thing, because I wrote an article today in the Toronto Star. I did mention that despite all the reasons why you don't think that you should spend money on a 37-year-old who's probably deep into the back nine of his NHL career, he's shown us more than enough at this point where whether it's next season or season and a half, I don't know if we're going to see much of a drop-off. But to your point... In your article that you have out for Sportsnet.ca, you also speak of the depth around him.
Yeah.
And that's what GMs have to be careful with, right? Is understanding the depth around Marchand. Is this a perfect storm for him? If he goes to Toronto, what do we see? But my point of why I have him linked to Toronto more than any other team is because they need those things outside of...
Those intangibles.
Those intangibles out off the ice to bring a team together. And Chris Tanev certainly did a good job, but he needs help.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. You know, all the conversations we've had about Mitch Marner, by all accounts, he's one of the guys who brings energy behind the scenes, you know, is a good sort of room guy. They like him. You know, with that energy gone, Marchand is a guy who pretty much wherever he goes – picks up the energy and the, you know, the, you look behind the scenes, any videos we see, he's that guy. So yeah, you can see here, they're firing rats at him. He's already got his own little routines with the boys. Like, he gets in quick.
And like he's done already, not the Panthers needed it, but he certainly added to it, but he is another guy that will drag people into the fight.
Well, force you into the money.
Right? Force you in.
He's running his mouth, and it's...
Moving forward for the Leafs, who needs that more than Austin Matthews and Willie Nylander moving forward?
It's good to have those guys. You just need, as long as some people are willing to answer the bell. Brad's not exactly a fighter.
No, but neither is the league.
No, that's a great point.
Neither is the league.
Nobody's fighting anyone.
So,
no, I shouldn't say no one. We just watched like game three, but...
But the ones that do it,
And
we know there's a handful of them. Mm-hmm. They usually find each other.
I do think it is worth noting, like, if Sam Bennett goes somewhere, if he goes to the Ducks or he goes to the pick your team, Columbus, I don't think he moves the needle the way he does on a team like Florida, where you're surrounded by other dogs, if you will. You're surrounded by other people who protect you a little bit. Marchand has had some of that help him in Florida. How much can he do without that protection? Well, the Leafs are a pretty good team, too. He should be able to be a pretty impactful player still.
The gist of my article, too, as well, is that if you're Sam Bennett and you do end up in Anaheim, or if you're Marchand in Toronto, it's not necessarily to win a Stanley Cup, but it's definitely there to change, and we'll use Brad Tree Living's words, of the DNA, the culture, the I'm going to show you guys how to win. We may not win, but I'll show you how to win.
You think they would go somewhere where the Stanley Cup is not the focus?
Not that it's not the focus, but it's the odds still may be against it. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you pulled up Anaheim. Anaheim's not ready to win the Stanley Cup anytime soon, but would Sam Bennett feel obliged to take their $12.5 million a year that they might offer just to come and teach the young kids something here moving forward? And what could Brad Marchand do for Easton Cowan and Matthew Nyes moving forward? And maybe it might not end up being a Stanley Cup in 2 years, but what about the things that they will take from Brad to move forward with? Where's the value in that?
Well, there is value. You know, I think if you look at the Ducks, a great example is they tried to do this a couple years ago, and they went out and got the hard-nosed, gritty playoff guy, and they said, we'll give Alex Killorn $6 million times 5 years or whatever the Killorn deal was. And it's like, he's Alex Killorn. Now he's playing on the top line for Anaheim, and they're no good. You know, like, I don't know, Bennett is Killorn plus for sure.
I don't see him going to Anaheim, by the way.
Okay, yeah. Right? Yeah.
I
don't see him sign for that number, but I know you bring it up.
I mean, that's what you'd overpay to get him to go there.
Yeah, to get him somewhere that he's not.
If he's just about the money.
Yeah.
If he's just about the money.
I got to tell you, if I had two Stanley Cups in my pocket, and he doesn't have two yet, he has one, Sam Bennett, and I'd only made, he'd been making, what's he been making, $5 million a year? Or
I think four, eight, I don't know,
like
four,
that.
five.
And then knowing it's kind of your last ticket. Yeah. I'd have a hard time not saying, sure, I'll go to the Ducks for if it's 12. You know, okay, like I'm going to try to set me and my family up for as long as possible here.
Well, I don't think...
No, instead of taking eight to win another cup or whatever,
I don't think Brad Marchand's apologizing to anybody, that he's making it clear he'll listen to anybody, and he told our Elliot Friedman that clearly about Canada. We do know that for all intent and purposes, he was vastly underpaid.
He's probably been underpaid by half.
Of the contract.
Of his career.
But the last four out of the eight-year deal that he signed, like, grossly underpaid.
No, but I mean by half. Like, he's been making six. He's probably been worth 12.
Yes.
He's got Hart Trophy votes in four of those seasons.
Yes. So I don't think he's going to apologize for going out there and asking for top dollar here. Mm-hmm. And I wrote in my article today that I believe that number could come between $8 and $9 million for him.
Yeah. I think if he, again, wins two cups,
he
always has a second cup, it's a lot easier for him to say, I'm owed money. Yeah. The league owes me money. So,
And I did mention, too, that, like, if I'm the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm not, I don't want you to come for 3 or 4 years and then leave. I want you to stay for the next 20 years.
Oh, Marchand.
Yeah.
Like, have him be a part of what they're doing here in some way.
100%.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I could see that.
You're a Canadian,
but he's the Boston Bruin.
Well,
you know,
I want to change that.
Yeah, that'd be hard. You'd have to win a cup, which I think they're trying to do. I've heard. Yeah.
Or help us build it in a managerial role when you're ready to retire.
Yeah. Do you think the Leafs would do like 3-4 years at $8-9 million?
What did Tanev do? I don't know. You got to use your imagination. Could you squeeze five years or 6 years and wash a couple away?
Yeah.
I don't know. Do you trade?
LTI retire?
I don't know how it would work, but that guy's a culture changer.
Yeah. Well, you see what he's done there in Florida. It's been pretty decent.
Does he have an outside? Is there enough games where he could actually take the Conn Smythe away from Bennett if the Florida Panthers win the Stanley Cup?
He'd have to go pretty bonkers, but he's at almost a point per game, 18 points in 20 games. You know, Bennett's got 20 points in 20 games. He's only 2 points behind him.
How about him setting a record for goals on the road? in the playoffs.
Is that Bennett?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. 42 PIMs, point per game, plus four. He's playing, he does it in 17, 16 per night. Not too shabby. Couple awards news, Kip, if you're good to move on from that.
Yeah. How did we find out about the who won the awards?
Daniele puts these packets together.
You didn't watch it on the, I didn't scroll my phone.
This is the problem with how they're announcing it is you have to like organically fall across it. So the one that I did come across was Anze Kopitar won the Lady Bing trophy.
For being the nicest player in the league.
And that's actually what his kids called it. His kids gave him the trophy in Slovenia on a golf day, and they said, you won the award for nicest NHL player, which a lot of people would pay to not have said about them. But Kopitar is one enough that he's allowed to to be that. And then the Cale Makar won the Norris,
so I
found out today.
I had Brian Burke in Hartford, and he added a clause in my deal saying, if I won it, I'd owe him money.
That's such a funny thing to put in a contract. Yeah, and that's maybe why you and I work on this show, is I won that almost every year I played. This guy, nicest guy, wouldn't hit a soul.
Yeah, and the big Norris.
And Norris was Cale Makar, who outlasted Quinn Hughes and Zach Werenski.
Okay, do we know how many votes? Because I thought Quinn Hughes...
Yeah, I think it just came down to games played for Hughes. He ended up being too injured.
Too quiet at the end of the year.
Makar ended up with 30 goals and 92 points.
Yeah, that's the bottom line right there.
Kind of made it a no-brainer at the end of the day. NHL award ceremony will air tonight at 6 p.m. ahead of Game 4.
I don't understand. They handed out the awards. Now they're going to do it again?
I don't know.
Are they all going somewhere on a stage or something?
No. I don't know.
We don't know.
I don't know.
Okay. We work for this station that's doing it.
They're going to have someone. There's going to be Zoom calls, I'm sure. They're going to talk to the people who won the awards. I made that up, but.
Okay. Now,
6 p.m. tonight.
Now we can tell everybody why Sammy McKee's on assignment. He's going to find out what the heck's going on with this show.
He's at the awards, maybe.
He might be at the awards getting the details.
We have a couple other interesting notes in here. Could Mario Lemieux and Ron Burkle buy back the Penguins?
Yeah, lots of talk leaking out, I guess. Pierre LeBrun, I think, was the first one to mention that there's a possibility that Mario Lemieux could still come back and own the Pittsburgh Penguins. Now, if I'm not mistaken, he still has like a minute... Mm-hmm. Share of the
team. Enough because they want to say he's still an owner.
Yes.
It helps the franchise.
Which would be like single digit percentage.
Yeah. They sold to Fenway in 2021, and the Fenway Group has been looking to sell a partial share of the franchise. So
the number reported out there was that they sold it for $900 million. And now, do we think that they might buy it back for how much?
Well, what's funny is that Forbes has them valued at way more than that $900 million now. So I don't know how that would work exactly, but...
Okay, but ask yourself this. Okay, if it's like whatever Forbes says...
Yeah, 1.75.
Why do they want to get out? If it's something that just keeps going up and it's doing great, why does the Fenway Group want to get out?
I don't know, but it's a question that's worth some pursuing, and usually it's follow the dollars. Maybe they don't trust that the dollars are really there.
Yeah, well, if you're Mario and you sold for $900,000, wouldn't you want to at least get back in for $900,000?
I would think so. I wonder if Fenway thinks they could get their $900,000 out that they put in if they bought it for $900,000 and then just kind of hang on to the rest.
It's not helping the Fenway Group that the team's really, you know,
going to stink for a bit
in the dumps right now.
Everything's great.
Yeah, there right? it is.
And I wonder what this means for Kyle Dubas.
I don't know.
Fenway Group signed him to a $30+ million contract.
I'm guessing he's going to get that money. Jonathan Toews narrowed down the spots that he would potentially sign with. The Leafs and Jets, per reports, are two clubs that have expressed interest.
All right.
I don't know. Do with that what you will.
Would you take Jonathan Toews over Tavares?
Yes.
You would? After being off for such a long time, and a guy just scored 38 goals,
Taves won Stanley Cups, then got long COVID.
We're going to pick up this conversation when we have more time. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the game tonight.